The funeral director opened the coffin, and there he was alone from the waist up. I peered down into his face, and for a moment I was taken aback, because it was not Gabriel. It was just some poor kid whose face looked like a room that had been vacated. But then I looked more intently at his heavy eyelids and fine features. He had always been a restive sleeper. Now he was weirdly still, my reckless boy.
Wow, Edward, that is a pretty brutal beginning to your poem. In fact, you bookend the poem with two scenes from your son's funeral. Why was that important to take us there to witness that scene?
First of all, I didn't want it to be a mystery story. I didn't want to be coy about what happened. I wanted to set out from the beginning that it was about the death of my son. And I was writing an elegy, but I wanted to break down the decorum of the elegy, which is usually somewhat polite and offers certain kinds of consolations. But the reality for me was much more devastating, and I wanted to try and catch that devastation right at the beginning, to begin on that note, so that whoever was reading this would know what's at stake.
Well, I would think the very decision to write this book, to tell Gabriel's story, must have been awfully hard for you for all kinds of reasons. I mean, for one thing, it meant that you had to enter into your pain, into your grief. What made you want to go ahead and write this poem?
I felt that a tsunami had hit me personally and that I needed to try to stand up. And I've spent my life in poetry, and I'm not a religious person. And after I'd been mourning for some time, I was left alone with my grief. And I really didn't know quite what to do with myself. And I thought that if I could call on my resources as a poet, then it would give me something to do with my grief. It would be something active. And I felt I could reach out to other people. And I began to think about how I might craft a poem. And it was comforting to me personally, not just to think about my own feeling, but also to think about the problems of poetry. Because when you're writing a poem, you have to think about poetry too. And somehow trying to transform the experience into poetry was a kind of, not exactly a comfort, but it gave me something to do. It was something active, a way to move my grief and to distract myself, to try and make something out of my grief into something that would hopefully be lasting.
Well, it raises the question of how do you render a story like this into a poem? And you ended up developing, using a particular structure. I mean, three-line stanzas with no punctuation. Why did you choose this particular way to write?
First of all, I hit upon something unpunctuated because I wanted something that would move quickly. It was really because Gabriel was such an impulsive kid. I wanted to try and capture the speediness of him, the impulsivity, the wildness. And I'd felt for some time, even before this, that I was writing clearly enough that I didn't need punctuation. But there was something that seemed untethered about writing in an unpunctuated way. And you could get a kind of syntactic ambiguity in the lines. But then I also needed some way to structure it. And I hit upon three-line stanzas, which every stanza had a kind of beginning, middle, and end. And there's a kind of echo in Dante of that, of the underworld, because he used terza rima. And I found that by structuring the three-line, unpunctuated three-line stanzas into sequences of 10, I could get a kind of rhetorical structure or near poem. And so I'd have the intensity of the lyric, but the poems would move. They weren't be individual poems. They were meant to be held together, and each one would lead you to the next one, and eventually you'd create a kind of larger, a book with a larger narrative arc. So I was trying to create something that was both lyrically intense, but also was able to tell something of the story of Gabriel's life.
Well, you also mentioned that you are working within that old tradition of poetry that deals specifically with death. I mean, the elegy, going back centuries, which you have defined elsewhere as a poem of mortal loss and consolation. How did you work with this particular literary tradition?
Well, first of all, The elegy, the lamentation, a form of keening, has always been part of poetry. There's never been a poetry without it. I think that it's extremely hard for us to come to terms with our mortality, the fact that we'll die and the people we love die, and that one of the functions or purposes of poetry is to try to give us some ways to feel and think about that. And that's always been part of my thinking about poetry.
Well, in fact, you've said elsewhere that the heart of poetry is the idea of death. I mean, you're not just talking about elegies. You're talking about poetry in general.
That's right. I think that the premise of poetry is to try, we're trying to save something that is ephemeral, that's passing, and we want to save it for that will be lasting. And there's something scandalous. It's an ordinary scandal, but it is a scandal. There's something shocking in the fact that everything passes away. And poetry is a way to try and enact something, to try and keep the experience, to try and render something so that it doesn't just pass away, to say, we were here, we lived. And poetry is a particularly powerful way of dramatizing the experience so that you don't know just someone doesn't tell you what it was like, but they try to show you how it felt like to be here. And that's the work of poetry.
So to go back to that definition that you have written of the elegy, which is a poem of mortal loss and consolation, did you find consolation writing this particular elegy to your son?
While I was working on the poem, I felt I was with Gabriel. When I was done working on it at the end of the day, then I didn't feel the consolation of it. Poetry is not life. It can't give you back fully life. It has its limits. I mean, I think it does some things better than anything else can do. But it can only partially give you back some experiences, and it can't give you back your people. So, yes, while I was dwelling in it, it was a kind of consolation and comfort for me because I felt I was with Gabriel. But afterwards, I still didn't have Gabriel. I had only my poem.
Well, you make a couple references in your poem, Gabriel, about your ambivalence of turning his life into a poem, and which raises a much larger question about the relationship between art and life. And there are famous examples of writers who basically thought that every part of their life was at the service of their art, even to the point of being willing to sacrifice certain family relationships in the process. And I'm wondering where you come out in that continuum between life and art.
I don't know how to feel about this. It's part of the scandal of literature. And I think it has a high cost. If you're going to write about people that you care about, and that's going to be part of what you write about, people are going to be exposed, and you're going to be exposed in ways that make yourself and make them uncomfortable. That's part of the project. And I have some conscience about it. But if you're going to tell the story, then you have to go ahead and try to be brave. And you have to try to tell the story as truthfully as you can. But it has consequences. And I'm very well aware in writing this poem that the poem is not actually the person. The poem is a representation, and I'm trying to represent my son Gabriel, but Gabriel was a living person, and can't entirely be represented. And so the moment you're speaking about in the poem is I'm telling an anecdote about Gabriel, and then I suddenly break off and say, you know, I'm scared of turning him into a story. Because anecdotes tell you something about a person, but they don't give you the person. And I just wanted to be aware and to make the reader aware that I'm afraid of rounding him up. I'm afraid of simplifying. I'm afraid of summarizing too easily. And that I want you to be aware that in writing about my son, I'm not giving you my son. I'm giving you my own rendition, experience, thoughts about him.
You said that there were consequences to writing this. And I'm guessing that goes beyond just how, you know, you can't turn your son, this living person, into, you know, this fictional creation in a way. But were there other consequences?
You know, people say things about Gabriel and that it didn't know him. And they sometimes write things about him, and you go, well, that's just extremely odd. and extremely strange, and sometimes they're close to the mark and sometimes they're far off. They're surmising things based on what you've written. And that's part of what happens when you write and publish a poem.
We should talk some about Gabriel, about what kind of person he was. How would you describe him, both as he was growing up and also the young man he became?
I would say that Gabriel was wild, impetuous, extremely impulsive, very funny. I think the success of Gabriel's life was that he took his various neurological disorders and problems and turned them into a kind of personality.
And he had been diagnosed with all kinds of things, attention deficit disorder, Tourette's syndrome, maybe bipolar disorder. I mean, there a lot of stuff that he was living with.
There's a whole menu of things. At one point in the poem, I list all the diagnoses that he was given. And finally, they ended on pervasive development disorder not otherwise specified, and which I know is a clinical diagnosis, but I didn't think told you very much. And, you know, I think none of these diagnoses ever were exactly accurate. And because Gabriel didn't exactly have a syndrome, which a syndrome is a suggestion that everything lines up in a certain way to care in a pattern. And Gabriel had things that were knocked out that were not in a pattern. We never had a good diagnosis for, you know, what was knocked out or what was wrong. But he took these various compulsions and disabilities that he had, and he used them and incorporated them into his personality. And he became quite a charming, charismatic young guy. And I always thought that was the success of his personality.
Well, you have a great passage that gets at this irrepressible and impetuous nature. Could you read it for us?
My pleasure. I'm now talking about Gabriel in his late teens, early 20s, when he was just so impulsive and moving around all the time. It was impossible to keep track of him at all hours. He spent whatever money he had, whenever he had it, spendthrift gambler. I could never stay mad at him for long. He just shrugged his shoulders and laughed helplessly. I couldn't help it. I had to, Dad. He wasn't made for a world of checkbooks and savings accounts, stockbrokers, investment bankers. Charlie called him a clown of God. He wasn't a monster of subtlety like the two of us. He would try anything once. He hazarded. He was sometimes scared. He was never scared enough of scoundrels and drug dealers. He thought teachers and supervisors and psychiatrists were the enemy. Policemen riled him. He had rights, a lover, a posse of friends. No one could restrain him. King of the sudden impulse, lord of the torrent, emperor of the impetuous.
That is wonderful.
It's funny.
Yeah. What was the hardest part about writing this poem?
Well, the hardest part wasn't with writing the poem. The hardest part was that you're trying to face a loss that is unendurable to you. And some things in life feel unendurable, and yet they have to be endured. They're unbearable, and yet they have to be borne. And so every day that I was working on this poem, I was trying to endure something that felt unendurable to me. And that's the hard part.
Yeah. We should talk about what happened to Gabriel. He died at the age of 22. In fact, he disappeared in late August of 2011, just as Hurricane Irene was sweeping into New York City. And there was no trace of him for 3 days while you and Gabriel's mother were frantically hunting all over the city to try to find him. And it turns out that he'd been at a party where guests were given a club drug. He became very sick, had a seizure, ended up dying from cardiac arrest in a hospital. And I know this is all very raw for you still to talk about, but can you explain, can you describe how you found out about what happened?
Well, the poem really tells the story of how he was missing and how we went looking for him and how we tracked him finally to his cell phone to a police station in New Jersey. And we went out to New Jersey, Gabriel's mother and me, and that's where they told us what had happened.
Yeah. Your poem builds in its sorrow, its grief. And there are references to your own Jewish background, though my understanding is that you are not an observant Jew in any sense. But there is a Jewish tradition of dealing very explicitly with mourning by saying Kaddish, and I'm wondering if that had any influence on either you or on the writing of this poem.
Both. I think Kaddish is it's a wonderful tradition in which someone says Kaddish every day for a year, for 11 months, after someone has died. I'm not religious enough myself to find comfort in that ritual, but I understand the wisdom of it. There's a period where you mark a very specific period of mourning in which you do something every single day to remember the person. You recite the words. And for me, writing this poem was a kind of way of saying Kaddish. It was a way of mourning. It was something to do with my grief, a way of marking the time, marking the passage, of being with Gabriel every single day while I was working. I'm Jewish, but I have not been able to find comfort in the traditional rituals of the religion. But I'm aware of them, and I understand their power and their authority and why they work. And I think all of religion is set up in a way to bring people into a community at moments where they find the greatest desolation. And I honor that, but I'm more secular-minded myself.
Well, by the end of your poem, I had the sense that you were practically wailing and certainly raging against the God you don't believe in.
That's right. I don't believe in God, but I can't give up the idea of him either. And, you know, I want someone to complain to. There ought to be a higher force to complain to. And I'm enraged. I'm in a kind of fury. And I'm also, you know, a lot of people are offering you, when someone has died, they offer you the consolations of it's all for a purpose and there's a reason behind it. And people offer you a lot of religious consolations. And I found them, for me, unacceptable. And so my poem rages against the idea, it rages against the deity. It's a kind of furious outcry against God.
Oh, you have a passage right near the end of your poem that gets at that. Could you read that?
Close the prayer book. I will not pretend that God brings peace upon us and upon all Israel. I don't want to hear anyone scolding me from her wheelchair because I'm crying too hard. I'm not worried about a heart attack. Nothingness, you've already broken my heart. I will not forgive you, son of emptiness, sky of blank clouds. I will not forgive you, indifferent God, until you give me back my son.
Edward, what do you hope readers will come away with after reading this book, this elegy about your son who has died?
I'm hoping for several things. One, I hope people know Gabriel better and have a feeling for what he was like and remember him. Part of the impulse of the poem is to remember Gabriel. And I want people to know what he was like. And I want people to know how I felt about him. But then I'm also memorializing the grief of other poets who've lost children. I'm entering into the stream of poetry. And I hope the poem will speak to other people who have great losses. Some of them who've lost children, but not exclusively people who've lost children. The work of mourning is the work of adulthood and sometimes of childhood too. We all lose people. No one escapes. And I'm hoping my poem will help bring some consolation, some comfort, some recognition to other people who've suffered great losses.
Well, and it seems that you're also drawing on the long tradition of what art is for. It's to leave a legacy. I mean, it's there after the people we've loved have died and after we have died as well. I mean, to some degree, I mean, you are leaving a testament there for future generations.
Well, thank you for saying so. That's the idea, that you leave something behind of what it felt like. And I'm trying to capture something of Gabriel, and I'm trying to capture something of our experience of raising him, and I'm trying to capture something of our feeling that we had for him. And I, you know, you want it to be lasting. You hope it will be lasting. You hope people will remember.
Thank you for sharing this story.
Thank you very much for your great sensitivity.